Hello.
Hi, Artie.
Hi.
Welcome.
Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Wonderful to hear your voice, too. So, hello, everybody who's calling in to find out about our fall meditation course called Radiant Mind Meditation. And I'm super delighted to have my dear friend, Michael Chandler, who has a doctorate in education. Michael, we know Michael by his spiritual name, Ravi Das, and pretty much everybody who knows him calls him R.D., so you can call him R.D. also. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I have known R.D. for many, many years, and I know that, R.D., you have a very long and winding path through the yogic traditions, studying with many teachers, and have accumulated well over 30 years of practice of yoga and meditation, and that you've written a few books along the way, Between Pleasure and Pain, The Way of Conscious Living, and the marriage and family book, A Spiritual Guide. And I know your wife, Nina Chandler, has also penned many, many, many books on women's health, so we're just so delighted to have you here.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. So I'm hoping today we can give our students and clients an idea of what to expect in this course and how meditation may be of benefit to them, mm-hmm. and feel for, you know, what we're going to be doing in this 6-week course. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping we can convey to everyone that, you know, in 6 weeks, you are going to have a radical shift in your perspective of how your mind works and how you can work with your mind. So why don't, R.D., you tell us a little bit about this particular style, Radiant Mind Meditation, and how you came to it and how it's impacted you in your life.
Right. I'll give it a shot. Well, I started meditating, as I think I've told you previously, Lynn, I think it's actually closer to 40 years or maybe more than 40 years ago. And I was very fortunate early in my career to come across Ram Dass. And I learned from him basic Vipassana-type meditation. And later, so a few years later, I was introduced to Baba Haridas, who was a teacher of Ram Dass. And who, to my good fortune, moved to California, and I was able to spend 5 very intensive years working with him, and then another 5 years when I was further away, so 10 years altogether, in which I went through training in the yogic tradition, and which included several different kinds of meditation. Much later on. I should interject that I did come across the teachings of Ramana Maharshi early on, around 1970, and, of course, these teachings were about non-dualism, and I was very attracted to that, although I didn't really pursue it very deeply until much later. But in 2006, I'm fast-forwarding here quite a bit, in 2006 I came across a man by the name of Peter Fenner, who was offering a course called The Radiant Mind, which is a 9-month-long course, and I found myself signing up for it, something which to make a commitment like that was a really extreme thing for me to do, but I found myself being very attracted to this approach. And basically, let me give you some of the key principles that attracted me. And these are going to sound strange, but there were 7 principles that I was really, really just attracted to, and I'm going to give you the words. The first one was non-intervention, in other words, not interfering in what was going on, and that in itself intrigued me. The second concept was non-resistance and non-effort, and I had been involved, for many years in really sort of strenuous efforts to learn to meditate, and so that in itself, non-effort, I said, wow, what's that about? I'd really like to learn more about that. And then another concept, non-manipulation. And I said, gee, I wonder what this is about. Really, really got me very, very intrigued. Non-separation, non-interference, and non-judgment. I said, wow, gee, this is more than interesting. I'm totally intrigued. I want to know what this is about. So I signed up for the course, and I was not disappointed. In fact, I would go so far as to say that the 9-month course really, in many ways, definitely changed my attitude from the inside out about meditation, and also I would go further and say about spirituality in general, because a lot of what I had been learning and the attitude with which I had been coming to meditation was a part of the problem that through the Radiant Mind process got undermined. And so I was to, you know, spend the next 9 months learning about what these principles actually meant in practice. And what I hope to convey in this introduction, in these 6 1.5-hour courses, is a little bit of what that means on the ground in a very practical way. So in a nutshell, that's really, you know, how I came to the Radiant Mind. And it's made a big, big difference in my life in terms of my, and I would say in terms of my physical health and my mental health as well. There's been a very deep relaxation that simply wasn't present before.
And did you find that relaxation, RD, both in your mind, like less busy mind and more space? And did you find that relaxation in your physical body as well?
Very, very much so. And, I was practicing asanas and pranayama, breathing, and, various kinds of meditation. And this particular approach, and I don't know, again, if it's just me, but it did have a profound effect on me because it was so radically different than anything that I had been approached, you know, that I had been offered before and which I had practiced very diligently. So there was a difference here. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not trying to say that this approach is better than the approaches that I had. But in my case, because of my conditioning, it was extremely helpful. And I will also add, not always easy, because my mind, having gone through this rigorous training that I had gone through for the previous 30 or 40 years, my mind really kind of balked at what I was being offered here. But I persevered because my intuition was that there was something valuable here. That has borne fruit. It's really true. Something very profound happened to me. And yet, when I say very profound, it's almost like nothing at the same time. So
yeah.
It's profound, but it's very, very subtle.
And, you know, I have to say, RD, that the times that George and I have sat with you, we've gone in very deep into that quiet, infinite space in a very easy way. And I was so impressed, which is part of why, you know, we've asked you to come and teach at our studio. And another thing is, when you started off talking about these teachings as being non-dual teachings, you know, mm-hmm. philosophically that aligns with the type of yoga that we teach and mm-hmm. and how we understand the universe to be and how we try to live our lives. So
mm-hmm.
I know for myself, having tried a variety of meditation styles over the years, finding that it was very challenging for me to do a style that was, you know, saying like, stop thinking, you know, empty your mm-hmm. mind, stop thinking, because I'm mm-hmm. doing something that in a way feels counter to what my mind is naturally doing, which is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of later on, as I, you know, found more tantric style meditations, which were much more about just observing what was happening in your mind mm-hmm. and kind of learning to understand the quality of thoughts and the way you think and the way the mind works, those types of meditation seemed a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know I can say, you know, to our listeners that the times that we've sat with George, it's my experience has been much more like the latter, where, mm-hmm. you know, there's this just open awareness where you're really not trying to, you know, make your mind do anything or stop doing anything. You're
right.
Simply, as you're saying, like not interfering and then not judging yourself for your thoughts.
Yes.
And I think it's a huge piece because most humans, you know, we're in the habit of judging ourselves for everything we do and say and everything we don't do and say. And I think this time, you know, this hour and a half each week for 6 weeks will give people a wonderful respite from their own mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I hope to share with people also is, you know, how we perpetuate our own conditioning. You know, meditation is supposed to wake us up and help us to dissolve our conditioning. But so much of what passes for meditation instruction these days actually reinforces conditioning. And in this mini course, I hope that I'll present them with a map actually of how conditioning works, and so that they will be able to see their own conditioning at work live in the moment. And I'm also hoping that we'll, you know, be able to actually stop in the session itself and take a look at how that is manifesting for different people live. And so that we won't just be spending, you know, the hour and a half trying to meditate, but we'll spend periods of time practicing, but then also discussing how the conditioning manifests and what we do to avoid what we're thinking and feeling, in fact, and how we can change that, you know. And there's a phrase that comes to mind that I think is very helpful to me anyway, and maybe it will be helpful to our listeners too, and that is that in this type of meditation, everything is included. Everything is included free of charge. There's nothing that we're trying to stop or start. And for me, again, that's been very, very important and helpful as a kind of a mantra, that everything is included. For example, this morning when I was meditating, suddenly at about 7 o'clock, I hear this loud combustion engine right outside my window. And we live on a quiet street in Amherst, as you know. And it's very unusual. And my first inclination was, oh, I wonder who's doing this, being so rude at 7 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, the next thing was, wait a minute, everything's included. Don't try to separate anything. Include.
Right.
So there I was with a combustion engine, and my mind was saying, I don't want this. This is not satisfactory. This is not conducive to a quiet meditation. And yet I just sat with it, and there it was, and my job was to include that. How can I find a quiet enough place inside where even this loud engine can be included? And I found myself actually hearing the silence and the loud engine, no problem.
Oh, that's so beautiful, RD. What a great experience to share with us from this morning.
Yeah.
You know, what I love about that so much is what I'm hearing you say in a way is that in order to include the sound of the combustion engine in your meditation, you had to allow your mind to expand and get so big that it could be included without completely filling up the empty space.
Yes, exactly.
If you were to sit and push away that sound, you would actually be contracting your mind and your awareness. And
yes.
Then it would be more like conflictive somehow.
Yes. Another one of the ideas that we work with a lot is observing, you know, attraction and aversion. Again, doing this live, not as a kind of a concept that we all know about attraction and aversion, but doing it live. And for example, again, my meditation this morning, my first inclination was aversion. I don't want this loud engine. You know, how can these people be so inconsiderate at 7 o'clock in the morning, et cetera, et cetera. And by the way, I don't know if you can hear it, but it's still going on.
I'm nodding my head in agreement, and I'm just anybody listening to this call is going, yep, I've been there too. I know what that feels like.
Yeah. So again, you know, the filter of attraction, what we're attracted to, ooh, it's nice and quiet. I love this quiet. It's so good to be able to sit down. Just being attracted to that and noticing the attraction versus on the other side, you know, loud noise and the immediate aversion. Mind says, I don't want this. This is not what meditation is supposed to be about, et cetera. So we will do some work with attraction and aversion and recognizing that cycle in ourselves and how in fact we create further suffering for ourselves through the attraction and aversion cycle.
Right. And that's a huge part, I think, of the lower mind, how the lower mind works, is that it is always contrasting and comparing and setting up this dualistic relationship with life, and that
yeah.
once you start to know, oh, like that's what my mind is doing, I can see my mind is in that cycle now, then we actually have a choice to allow our mind to expand and be more non-dual.
Yes. And as we do that, the mind becomes infused increasingly with, you know, what we can call unconditioned awareness, that underneath the mind and its workings is an unconditioned awareness, and that if we can learn to rest in that that unconditioned awareness, it becomes deeply, deeply healing. And in fact, in Buddhism, they call that resting the ultimate medicine. And the reason they call it ultimate medicine is because it is so deeply healing to the battered psyche, to the battered body on many, many different levels. So there's a deep healing, and this, again, you know, one shouldn't expect that this happens in 5 minutes, but over time, as one learns to practice in this way, with this kind of openness and this kind of curiosity, there is a deep, deep healing that takes place. And I can really speak from personal experience with this, because it's happened for me. And it's an ongoing practice. It's not something that, you know, a light goes off and then you're enlightened forever and that's it. This is an ongoing thing because conditioning is very, very profound and deep for all of us.
Yeah.
And conditioning creates a tremendous amount of suffering for us. And this is a way to really, it's a direct antidote. It's learning not to condition the next moment, as it were.
And would it be fair to say, RD, that another way to describe conditioning is the way we react to life? Like, conditioning is reacting?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And it's
more responsive?
It definitely makes us more responsive, because we're able to see what our tendencies are in terms of reacting. As we get, you know, as we get more and more quiet inside, we realize, wow, there's that tendency toward attraction on the one hand or aversion on the other hand, and it becomes sort of we simply go into this unconscious conditioned mode, and there we are reacting.
As we
quiet down, we put ourselves more at choice. We're able to see, wow, I don't have to act out of that conditioning. I can sit with that, and let's see what happens as I sit with it. And inevitably what happens is that, although it may be difficult at times, we learn to rest even with the discomfort of conditioning as it arises. For example, an angry feeling might arise, and you don't even know really where it's coming from, but it could be something that's latent, that's been in there for the last couple of days, and now suddenly as you relax, there it is coming to the surface. So you learn more and more to sit, and sometimes to endure even. So there's a training aspect to what we're going to learn. It's not all just sort of, you know, easy and then you feel blissful. It's not about that. It's about both the pleasure and the pain of just sitting and noticing what's arising. But perhaps more important, the ultimate medicine side of this kind of realization, which, by the way, in Sanskrit is called shunyata. It means realization of openness. It really means openness, being open, being curious in a genuine way.
Shunya. Let's tell everybody, shunya means the open space, the empty field of awareness.
Right, exactly. And as that happens, we get more and more in touch with the unconditioned awareness, and we learn to allow unconditioned, we learn to recognize it more and more. And it's a subtle thing, but once we start to recognize it, it becomes familiar. It becomes familiar, and then we say, oh, there it is, and of course it's immediately gone as soon as the mind says that.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, what's coming to mind visually is, you know, if you think of your laptop screen or a movie screen before you boot up or before the movie starts, there's just a blank screen.
Yes.
And then the movie or the image is projected onto that screen, and your mind goes to the image and what's happening and what's changing and the story and the characters and all that, and
right.
yet that empty screen is still there.
Yes.
So we could learn, perhaps, to become also aware of that empty screen while we're watching the movie.
Yes, yes, very well put, exactly. Yes, indeed, indeed.
You know, you use this term unconditioned awareness as the ultimate medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And you told us that it's a resting place and it's deeply healing to the body and the psyche. I'm wondering if you can give us some synonyms that would help people, you know, have a better understanding of what that unconditioned awareness would feel like if they were in it. And I know we're going to do that, of course, but, you know, so if you were saying, like, in the unconditioned state of awareness, you might expect to experience, like, peace.
Well, I don't want to give people the sort of what I think is a false notion that always when you're in unconditioned awareness that the space is only peaceful, because that may not be true. You may be in the unconditioned space and yet there may be other things going on in your life. For example, your mind might be agitated. You might be upset about something. There may be something that's bothering you at work. There may be something that's, you know, not working right in your relationship and you feel uneasy. But being in unconditioned awareness at the same time, you notice that, wow, that's interesting. That's the condition of my body-mind. So we're not making a separation between the peace and the quiet of the unconditioned and the condition of our mind and or bodies. There might be pain in the body at the same time. I mean, for example, somebody could be in the unconditioned awareness state and be dying, for example. And there's no contradiction at all. And experiencing a great deal of pain, let's say, in the process. And it's still possible to be in unconditioned awareness and be experiencing something which is not particularly peaceful or pleasant in the normal way. How, on the other side of the coin, though, when you practice and you get into it deeply, what does emerge is increasingly a more and more quiet and peaceful state. And one does slow down tremendously inside. And the movements of the mind definitely slow down more and more. But I don't want to give the false impression that the goal here is only peace, and that if you don't have peace, there's something wrong, because that would be very dualistic.
Because I know there are some, you know, styles and traditions where, you know, even in yoga, you know, the whole point is to get enlightened or to get away or to have some exit strategy from your suffering.
Right.
I know in the Tantra, you know, the idea is, let's embrace everything in our experience and learn how to work with it and learn to identify it for what it is.
Right, right. Well, I would say that this is definitely more in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would we be able to say having gone through this 6-week course, and of course everybody is different and everybody's going to in a different starting point with meditation, and there's no prerequisite. You don't need to have any meditation background to do this, or you could have a lot. It doesn't matter. Either way, everybody's welcome.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I don't think that any particular experience in meditation is necessary. On the other hand, people that do have experience, if they're open, and I would say, you know, there's an if here, if they're open to learning a new, a new filter or a new attitude toward the practice that they're doing, then this Radiant Mind approach can be very, very beneficial and does not require necessarily changing the methodology that you've been using up to now. What it does challenge is an attitudinal shift, which is a subtle but very, very important very important shift. It made a big difference for me. For example, I have no conflict with any type of methodology that I used previously. I can use those techniques, and it's just that's what I'm doing in the moment. There's no conflict. But I don't, I'm not trying to think that I should be somewhere else other than where I am.
Right.
One of the things that we look at is the tendency of the mind to say that what's happening right in this moment should not be happening. You know, I would feel okay if only my mind was less busy than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would feel okay if I didn't have this pain in my knee, you know, et cetera. So we learn to see how the mind creates conditions, you know, which we call the something missing syndrome, that we unconsciously use as an excuse to keep ourselves in suffering and in pain of some kind or another.
Beautiful. Well, I know we could go on and on and on and on.
Yes,
I want to add a few things to the call that we will be adding an early bird registration for September 1st. Mm-hmm. The course is starting, is it the September 25th, Wednesday nights from 6 to 7:30 p.m. There's a ton of information up on our website. You can go and read it. www.prakashayoga.com. And RD and I had talked about having me lead just a few minutes of asana in the beginning, maybe 10 or 15 minutes of a few stretches so that we'll do some hip openers so that you'll be able to sit. And we do have chairs. If anybody doesn't do yoga and doesn't want to sit on the floor, we welcome you to a chair, blanket, bolster, whatever makes you comfortable. So really, we're inviting everybody to come and join us, and we really look forward to the course. And I want to say one last thing, and then I'm going to ask RD to give us maybe one or two points to wrap up in, you know, what the main benefits might be. You know, how we might change from beginning to the end. What two or three things we might really take away. But lastly, I'll just say that this work is completely compatible with the teachings of yoga as I've learned from my teachers and as I teach my students. And I think it's going to be an immensely helpful course, and I hope each and every one of you signs up and takes it, and hopefully we'll have RD come again another time. But we don't have another time scheduled, so don't miss it, September 25th to October 30th. Okay, RD, can you give us like maybe one or two main, you know, benefits or what's the radical shift someone might learn about themselves by taking?
Well, I want to share with you just a very, very brief five-line poem that a yogi by the name of Tilopa, about 1,000 B.C., no, sorry, not 1,000 B.C., 988 to 1069 of the Common Era said, and he said, as the darkness of night, even were it to last 1,000 years, could not conceal the rising sun, so countless ages of conflict and suffering cannot conceal the innate radiance of mind. And that's the quote that I want to share, and it's very moving to me. And the reason I wanted to share it is because there is a recognition that happens through this work that is wonderfully freeing. And I would say that it moves meditation from the pillow, from sitting on the pillow or sitting in the chair, to one's everyday actions. And that is what I hope to impart in this course.
That's beautiful, RD. That's just what we're trying to help people with, how to take the yoga off the mat and into their everyday life.
Right.
So
right.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so very much. We will
thank
be on the phone again, RD and I, on Tuesday, September 10th at 7:30 p.m. The dial-in number is on the website. And we invite everyone to join us for that call. If you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. And we look forward to seeing you in September. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much, RD. What a pleasure. I am so excited for this course.
All right. Well, I look forward to being with you too, Lynn. It should be fun too.
Thank you so much.
All right. Okay.
Oh, and
bye
would you send
now.
Me a copy of that poem? I'd like to post that on the website.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Namaste.
Okay. Namaste to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.